If you're a local government enthusiast who's looking for fresh conversations over a hot cup of morning coffee or tea or while you're driving or walking the dog, you do you. You're in the right place. Welcome to the Local Gov Cafe podcast, hosted by Susan Gardner and Ann Mitchell. This podcast is devoted to having conversations that matter, covering the full menu of municipal topics. You'll discover guests who bring insight and inspiration to the issues that drive and challenge communities. We'll be talking with leaders in policy, practice, consulting, and academia to put a spotlight on civic government and the people who make it all happen at the local level.
I'm very pleased that we have Sabine Matheson with us to talk about the Strong Mayors legislation that has recently been implemented in Ontario and the municipal power structure between mayors, council, and CAOs. Sabine is a senior public affairs practitioner who is currently a partner and general counsel for Strategy Corps. Welcome, Sabine.
Well, thanks for having me.
We're really excited to have you with us. And you've done a presentation at CAMA talking about the new legislation and aptly entitled, What's Going On in Ontario? The question all of us are asking. In the presentation, you said it's all about housing. Give us some background on that, if you could.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that's a really important place to start because the... You know, the Municipal Act lays out the foundations of the way the municipal administration works and the basic power relationships between the mayor and council and the administration. And, you know, it has a logic, and that logic has evolved since the 1840s, you know, very slowly in a very predictable way. And it's taken quite an unpredictable turn just of late, not because people lost confidence in the ability of the logic of municipal administration, but because of a sudden need to achieve housing outcomes. I think everybody understands the kind of national crisis of supply and affordability. It's particularly acute in Ontario. And the government has set a goal, which pretty much everybody's aligned with, to try and build 1.5 million new homes over the next 10 years. This is a significant political commitment. It's something that polls very well with the public. But it's easier said than done. And so the Strong Mayor legislation is part of a whole suite of legislative reforms that are designed to try and achieve this. And so some of them relate to growth and planning policy and things that let you get more built. But not just that, things that would basically put an onus on Ontario municipalities that they've never experienced before. That is to say, municipalities have typically been people who would receive applications from private proponents and they'd tell you, oh, it's too tall, or you got to do this, or you got to do that. But there's never actually been an affirmative obligation on municipalities to achieve particular housing targets before and say, you know, you've got jolly well got to get this done in the next 10 years. And so the government, through Bill 23, imposed that as a new target. And that's a fundamental change in the orientation of municipalities to getting stuff done. They've also tried to make housing more affordable by limiting growth funding tools like development charges. And of course, that's either great news if you're a member of the public or not so great news if you're a municipal treasurer. Provinces said they'll try and keep municipalities whole, but no one knows entirely what that means. So it causes kind of some concern about the municipal capacity to get essential infrastructure built. They've also made changes to the two-tier structure out of concern that it caused too many delays in approvals. And this is what leads you to the fourth piece. The fourth piece is the Strong Mayor legislation. And so because it's the fourth piece, it comes out of this logic of it's meant to be a tool that will accelerate the approval of more housing. And I can tell you some more about that.
Thank you. You've described the province's action as a solution to the perceived lack of will. What are those perceived problems and what are the solutions being implemented by the province?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the lack of will is really what I was pointing at, because imagine you've got the right planning tools and you've got the right infrastructure to connect new houses to, and you've gotten rid of two-tier government so you can make things move faster. The last problem you might be concerned about is, well, what if some ward councillor wants to oppose everything because of a bunch of NIMBYs? And so you've heard the government at sometimes refer to municipalities as roadblocks in the land use planning system. And many municipalities would sort of listen to that, smile and say, none taken. You know, who are you calling a roadblock, you know? So the idea is, how about if we're worried that the planner just doesn't get it and doesn't want to move, well, how about we give the mayor the ability to fire the planner, create some accountability? What if the problem is NIMBY politics and the council has a kind of an informal relationship where I won't mess in your ward if you won't mess in mine, and my residents hate this proposal, so I'm going to vote against it and you'll all vote with me, right? Well, maybe it'll get sorted out at the Ontario Land Tribunal. Maybe it won't, but it'll take an extra couple of years and cost more money, both because of the passage of time and inflation, but also because of all the other costs associated with the delay and fighting. So how about instead we give the mayor a veto? And so the mayor can get it through you can overturn a no vote with, or perhaps we give the mayor the power to propose something and pass it with only a one-third level of support. Suppose we're worried that the various committees of council don't move quickly enough, so we give the mayor the ability to appoint members and designate chairs, or perhaps we're worried about the way the municipality works, so instead of letting the CAO run things, we let the mayor decide what the organizational structure should be. And suppose we're worried that, oh, well, you know, we're not providing the kind of infrastructure that we need to support growth, so we'll let the mayor do the budget. In other words, suppose you created a bulldozer that could breach any of these problems and just get on with the business of enforcing provincial direction. And that's where you see it makes total sense. If you think that municipalities should be an implementer of provincial policy, and if you think that they're not fulfilling that role and they're acting like a roadblock, then strong mayor would be that thing that you'd go to Home Depot to buy as the, I want the Acme Council Accelerator to have it move along faster, right? But what happens if you think that municipalities should actually be an order of government, not just an implementer of provincial policy? And what if you think that they should be a partner as opposed to people who are jolly well doing what they're told? You might think, I'm a little nervous about this and what it's going to do to my local democracy. So, you know, I'm kind of torn, like I think a lot of Ontarians are, because we know we need the housing and the province is not wrong about that. But the question is, how far are you prepared to go in redesigning the structure of local governments so that it can deliver this particular outcome at this particular time? And that's the real question.
Did they look at other alternative solutions? Well, or is this the only one they looked at? That's my big worry, because this as a city manager terrifies me.
Well, you know, you cannot fault this government for its failure to be comprehensive. You know, like they have definitely, as I started rhyming off at the start, they've done lots. And many people would be complaining about the pace and scope of change rather than that they hadn't done enough. I think the way to think of it is being kind of like the side effects. You know, it's like a medication, you know, chemotherapy drug. You know, in the early trials, they'd say, well, it really did a great job, but regrettably, the patient died. And I think the real question with this is, can you use a tool as powerful as this without having side effects that are worse than the cure? And that's the problem.
And that's where I want to go next is, let's dig in a little bit more on this legislation, not just what it does and hopes to do, but tell us more about the risks as you perceive them, some of these potential side effects.
Well, you know, I think if you think about the series of basic relationships, one of the most important ones is the relationship between the mayor and council. And in our normal council system of government, the mayor is just one vote. And so you make the mayor a strong mayor, and all of a sudden you're separating them out to a much greater degree than has ever been the case before relative to their other colleagues on council. And, you know, in the case of John Tory, who the premier held up as a really great example of somebody who deserved to be a strong mayor, that was one part attribute to John Tory, the human being, you know, that he had such remarkable stature. It was also a tribute to his electoral mandate. At the time, I think he'd had about 68% of the vote in the most recent election. And so he could legitimately say, who is some ward councillor? And of course, Toronto had a council of, you know, 25, who is a one person with, you know, a third share of the votes in one ward. Who are they to stand in the way of Mayor Tory? But, you know, in another municipality where a mayor got elected in a three-way or a four-way or, God forbid, a five-way race, somebody could win with 26% of the vote or 22% of the vote, and they might be on a council of seven. And so then the mayor plus one other person could use that 33% veto. So that's an issue. And so what does that do to the solidarity of a council that's working together? And would you get resentment between the mayor and the council? And I think that's, you know, a legitimate concern. So a lot of it would come down to how well they operate together. So another possibility is, what does it do to the relationship between the mayor and the CAO and the council and the CAO? And we know the CAO position is extremely important. Anybody who's likely listening to this knows and doesn't need to be told why, but let's just make it clear. We typically call the CAO the linchpin between the civic administration of professional public servants and the elected council. And so they are the only employee that's hired by the council, and they are the people who are responsible for transmitting the will of council to staff in a way that brings their legitimate instructions to life. And they were supposed to do so through a vote of council. And under our rules, prior to the strong mayor, it was very clear there's no taking orders from any one person, including the mayor. And so what does it do to the CAO position if they can be hired and fired at the sole discretion of the mayor? And what does it do to the CAO position if they go from being the head of a professional public service to being the mechanism of control of the public service in the hands of the mayor? And does that change the relationship with the staff? Does that change the relationship between the staff and council? Because as it is, you sometimes see council taking the view that senior staff are stooges of the mayor, not to put too fine a point on it. So does the Strong Mayor Act say, oh, you know, that, yeah, that concern that you had that they might be the stooges of the mayor?
They definitely are.
Well, yeah, what if we just confirm, actually, they are. Have a nice day, right? And the thing is, it's not just the CAO. The power to appoint stretched down to all sort of department heads that would, the specific language of it is to hire, fire the CAO or any other department or division head with the except of statutorily prescribed positions like the chief medical officer of health. So it's not just the CAO. So it's kind of a big deal. Also the authority to control the organization structure. What does that do to the relationship between the CAO and the staff? Because if the CAO isn't the boss anymore, and if the mayor says, do this, well, what's the role of the CAO? How are you, like, do you become the second in command when you're used to being the boss of the public administration? And then I think finally, for my list anyway, although there's probably more that could be said, how does it change the role of the public? Because the mayor isn't given the authority to do whatever they want about anything. Like, the province didn't go that far. The province gave them the authority to implement provincial policy. So I think the origins of our local government was very much about giving the local public a representative who would be the expression of the local will for the implementation of provincial policy. Because really the origin of our local government is the province would tend to set the policy, and then the councils would tend to use the discretion they had to tailor it so that it worked in the specifics of the local community. But if you change the mayor from being the elected representative of the people to being the occupying army of the province, then you fundamentally change the nature of their role with the electorate. And that's really different to be the person who implements provincial policy rather than the person who sticks up for the local community. And this is a tension, like I'm very familiar with this when I served in the Harris government in the 90s. You could definitely see the tension between these two views. Are the municipalities there to implement the provincial will, or are they an order of government that's elected on its own, that's accountable for its own spending to its own electorate? And this is a tension that is frequently, I think, at the root of the tensions that we experience in the Ontario municipal public service. The province gets very concerned about doing something very important. And then the municipal sector says, well, that's very nice, and I'm glad that you have your priorities, but we actually have other priorities. And when the province says, we don't care, we're doing it anyway, that's usually when you get the kind of anxiety that we're hearing about this provision. And just the last point I'd make is, I don't think it can be said enough times, the province didn't wake up in the morning and say, how can we rashly mess with the heads of CAOs? They woke up in the morning and said, how can we remove every possible roadblock to achieving the goals that the public has, which are essential to our mandate as the provincial government in regard to achieving housing goals? And so I do not fault them for being vigorous in the pursuit of delivering on the thing that they were elected to do. What I just worry is, you know, there's sledgehammers and chainsaws, and then there's arthroscopic surgery. And I wonder if in their vigor to get this done, if they could have found a tool that was potentially less disruptive. And that's the essence of my anxiety about this. I worry about what it does to the sustainability of municipal government 365 days a year on every file other than housing. But I do not quarrel with the fact that the province thought that it was really urgent to deal with housing. And I respect that they had the courage to do that. But, you know, it's about doing what you need to do with the minimum of negative effects. And that's where my anxiety is.
Maybe not the right tool.
Thank you. And you mentioned priorities, and some of the priorities, they said housing and other priorities, and some of these priorities have not yet been identified. Can you kind of expand on that a bit?
Well, you know, honestly, that's the batteries not included that's in the legislation. You know, that if they were to say, like imagine a different government comes in and climate change becomes a provincial priority. So then a different boot would be on the foot, and you could have the province declaring that. And, you know, it could be a tool that would make all the fiscal conservatives cry because you now have the province creating a strong mayor who's mandating all kinds of required spending in order to deal with climate change mitigation measures. I mean, the concern here isn't about the outcomes that it might be put to. It's the fundamental nature of the change from a government that is a council that requires majority votes to a thing that can get by with minority votes for proposing things and changing things, whatever the outcome might be. If you don't know what the outcome is going to be, a great way to assess how satisfied you're going to be with it is, well, you know, I don't like they did, but they followed the process. And so now we've changed the process. And the only thing I know for sure is that there's plenty of things in the municipal world that are inherently contestable, that they're inherently argumentative, they're inherently political. They're about the allocation of scarce resources, or they're about the imposition of burdens. And, you know, all we really got is we follow a process, we notify the public that we're thinking about it, they get an opportunity to comment, the staff prepares an independent report, council debates on the subject of all the different inputs that they've had, and then they decide. And that was the process that we had before. And so what's changed? Well, now it's okay, we still got to tell the public we're thinking about it. But the mayor can say, you know what? I'm going to tell the staff what content to present to council. The mayor can say, I'm going to tell the staff what to put before council. It couldn't have done that before. Only could have done that through a vote of council, bring us alternatives in relation to A, B, and C. So now the mayor could say, I only want you to bring forward alternatives in regard to A, and there's nothing staff could do about it. And if staff were to say, well, I think I have an obligation as a professional public servant to warn the public about B and C, they say, well, that's nice, you're fired. Like, it's actually a bit like operating a saw with some of the safety guards taken off.
Many of them, right? Yes.
But, you know, nobody's saying that the government is going to be encouraging the mayors to be using these powers improvidently. But the problem is the success of the system is going to be judged by the most ham-fisted utilization of the powers, by the worst judgment of the person who, you know, does the least honorable job of implementing these tools.
Certainly, I want to come back to you, and you kind of alluded to it on the reference to John Tory, and you talked about it in your presentation at CAMA, about, you know, the personality of the person, the potential for this to be used as much for ill as for good. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, look, in most of my career, it's been my great pleasure to serve with people of very high and great integrity. So I don't think that Canadian municipalities or Canadian provincial governments have suddenly become a bucket shop of bad behavior, right? But, you know, there's an old adage, good fences make good neighbors. And was always a really good fence between council and the public administration. And the public could always say, the mayor may find it very convenient if only the mayor's perspective is advanced on this subject matter. But I know that we all collectively pay public servants whose job it is to give a balanced interpretation of things. Now, look, somebody could say to me, oh, yeah, great. And you and all your, I was going to say white male privilege. I don't quite have that anymore. But you and all your privilege, you know, that would stack the deck for your perspectives. Of course, you like the status quo. You're the sort of person who would have said that. What we really need is somebody who's going to cut through the crap and make things happen, because it's unacceptable that there's so many delays. It's unacceptable that it takes so long. It's like, why can't we get things done? And I get it. There's lots of frustration with the way things work. But the problem is that the legitimacy of a government comes from the fact, A, that you were elected, and B, that you follow the procedures of natural justice, and then you follow the codes of conduct, and you do things in a way that allow people to say, I may not agree with what you did, but at least I agree that the process was there. And what this does is it just consolidates power as between the province, puts it in the hands of a smaller number of people, disempowers folks who we have traditionally relied upon to be part and parcel of being guarantors of the system and the system's integrity. And it's kind of like a consolidation of power that's putting the hands, more authority and more power into the hands of a smaller number of people. And, you know, maybe it was that diffusion of power that made the system as fair as I have experienced it through most of my career. I guess at worst, what I can say is, I don't know how this new thing is going to work, but it's not what we've relied upon through the entirety of my career. So does that make me a little nervous? Yes. But am I suddenly going to run for the exits? You know, no. Like, I think there's things that we can do to make it better. And maybe what I might have been tempted to do was try this as a pilot project and say, you know what, we got to get 1.5 million houses built. Until such time as we do that, we're going to have expedited procedures. But then we'll return to our previously scheduled
program. Emergency powers almost.
Yeah. You know, I think the main thing is what makes the municipal sector so great. As I started my career in partisan politics and, you know, what legislative type environments, at first in Ottawa and then at Queen's Park. And it's a wonderful system. You know, as Churchill would say, it's the worst system except for all the others. The amazing thing about the council structure is that it is a mechanism by which a whole bunch of totally random people who never said they agreed on anything get themselves elected. They wind up around a horseshoe. And while the mayor has certain responsibilities for providing some leadership, there's still just one vote on council in our traditional system. And it compels a whole bunch of people to work together as they try to figure out how to make sense of provincial priorities and apply them to their local concerns and realities. And I think that's kind of wonderful, because the thing that I liked the least about the provincial and federal systems as I was getting older was the propensity for you to find that within your own party, there were people who you disagreed with more than people in other parties. And I always found the partisanship to be a real annoyance, and the use of wedge policies and politics to kind of create barroom brawls between the parties. And the lovely thing is when you get a municipal government where you get a bunch of people who probably wouldn't agree if they were forced to pick a party, but who managed to get 7-0 votes most of the time by collaborating and working together. And the thing that I don't want the municipal sector to lose is the idea that, okay, now there's a government and an opposition instead of a horseshoe. Well, what do you mean? Well, the mayor and the mayor's cabal, they always vote with their 1/3. And the rest of us, we're just on the outs waiting until the next election. Because there's no business card in the municipal sector that says leader of the opposition. You know, if you decide to play it that way, A, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. And B, that's your own business. I never ask the government to say, hey, I know, how about we change it? And the thing that I kind of love about local government is that it's about inclusive government. It might not be effective, and I don't mean to say it's ineffective, but what I mean is Westminster government, legislatures and parliament, all go back to the same root. And their function is, hey, let's take a diverse population. Let's put somebody in charge. We'll give them 4 years. We'll see how it goes. How bad can it be? We'll throw them out at the end of 4 years if we don't like it. And to help put a limit on their virtual dictatorial powers that they'll have if they have a majority, we'll have an opposition whose whole purpose is to work with the media to call out all the bad things that they do. And that'll provide a functioning government. And honestly, in a nutshell, that's how a Westminster system works. Council isn't about aggregating effective power in the hands of a small number of people and see how it goes. It's about inclusive distribution of power and hope they can work it out. And I think that there's something kind of beautiful about that. And if I were going to be generous to the province, because I think it's really important, nobody at Queen's Park is sitting here trying to say how to undermine the system. They're sitting here trying to say, what do we need to do differently to solve a problem? And I think what they tried to do is say, oh my God, there's nobody in charge. They can't move like they got a purpose. We actually need to aggregate some effective power so we can get something done, right? And I sort of respect that, but I just worry that you're creating half of the reality of a legislature form in something that has half of the reality of a council form. And it's only partially baked. It's like, okay, you got a hot dog and you got a hamburger. And what's this thing? It's neither a hot dog nor a hamburger, right? I don't know what it is. And I don't know if it tastes good. But it's not one or the other. It's going to have trappings of one and trappings of the other. And I'm worried about what doesn't make sense. But, you know, ultimately, it's going to be our responsibility to make it work. Municipal government's about making it work. It's not about baying at the moon. The province is in charge. But I just think it's about figuring out ways to say, okay, we understand why you're doing this. We are going to appeal to the people who have the power to use it wisely. We are going to appeal to the administrators to figure out new ways to mitigate the negative effects. And we're going to try and figure out how to get 1.5 million houses built.
Let's hope we see those houses. Thank you so much, Sabine. It's been a pleasure chatting with you and great insights. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us in the Local Gov Cafe. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a minute to share on social media or tell a friend. And we hope you'll join us next time as we welcome our next guest. You won't want to miss it.